The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
My next guest has written an extraordinary memoir. It's called Serve, My Lost Years at the Heart of Opus Dei, in which she talks about her harrowing experience within that Catholic institution in Ireland in the 1980s. She was lured into Opus Dei at the age of just 15. She remained there for almost 7 years until her family helped her to escape. Anne-Marie Allen, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you.
I want to go back to your young, early teen years when you were not quite happy-go-lucky because you were working in a local hotel, but you were enjoying life.
Yeah, I was having a typical teenage life. At that stage, Pat, I was going to school in Clochisagan, which is the secondary school there, run by the De La Salle brothers, and I was working in a local hotel. Came from a small family, very sports-oriented. I liked my set dancing and I liked my music and my fashion, and I had lots of friends.
Now, in your own mind, what did you see ahead of yourself? What was your life going to be?
I wanted to finish up my education. I wanted to train as a chef. I was a good cook even then. I liked food and the science of food and so on. And I wanted to have a good life. I wanted to be a good person, and I wanted a good life for myself and to get married and have a family.
Now, in the local hotel, you weren't always allowed help with the cooking, but whenever opportunity arose, you seized it.
I did. And I used to help the owner do the dinners for the different socials and all that were on. I was in charge of the counting the plates. There used to be stacks of four, and do the stuffing and all that. Yeah. Good fun. Yeah. Nice times. Very happy times.
So you thought you might go on to study all of this and become formally a chef.
A chef, yeah.
Now, what happened then to make you leave home, and where did you go?
I came across a friend's mother came across this ad in a newspaper for the school in Galway, and between the comings and the goings, to cut a long story short, two women from this school appeared in Ballyvourna.
That was attractive, this idea of going to Galway to learn all of this stuff, and you didn't have to pay, even though it was a private school. Yeah. In fact, they might even pay you.
Yes, correct. It was very, very attractive. It was a 2-year diploma course. We were going to be living in, we were going to get pocket money of £5 a week, and we were going to be safe. And also, which was the real sweetener, that we were guaranteed a job at the end of it. And my parents were blown away by this.
All girls?
All girls were to be given it.
Which was reassuring for your father, I believe.
Yeah, both of my parents. Yeah, I mean, it was our country was in a state of high unemployment at the time. There was a lot of immigration. So, yeah.
Now, when you arrived, how normal or abnormal did it appear to you?
When we arrived, I mean, it seemed really, really nice, very nice surroundings. The people were so friendly. You know, the accommodation was very attractive, not quite basic for us. But, you know, that it was lovely to look at and nice atmosphere to be in for a time. But, you know, the class system between them and us was very apparent on the first night. And I think you'll see that in the book. Yeah. So same food, but two different dining rooms, different quality of wear, and that class system, you know, it was very much them and us.
Now, how much religion was involved in all of this from the very beginning?
A lot of religion, even though we were a very Catholic country and we were a Catholic family at the time, you know, it seemed to be ramped up when we were there. So it involved the 15 decades of the Rosary, Mass every day. Just as students, that was expected of us, to go to confession to an Opus Dei priest and so on. But gradually that began, started saying, look, maybe you need to come and do some prayer and join us and do some spiritual reading with them and so on.
So at the beginning, you were just a student, but the regime was quite Catholic and overbearing in terms of all of that.
All of that.
Did you know that that was the kind of school you were going to? I mean, were you aware this is an Opus Dei organisation?
We did. I didn't know what it was.
Myself, 15,
I didn't know what it was. I had read all the Mallory Towers books and I thought I was going to a boarding school and I was going to be midnight feasts and all this kind of thing. But my dad had an awareness of Opus Dei, and he did question them on it.
Because he was a bit sceptical about Opus Dei at the very beginning, and they managed to bring him round.
They managed to bring him round.
And got his imprimatur to allow you to go to the school.
Right, yeah.
Now, how tough was the regime? What kind of work were you required to do?
Well, from the very beginning, there was a group of us there, I think it was about eight students, and we ran a conference centre. We did the catering, the laundry, the housekeeping of the conference centre, which I think housed about maybe 40 people. And I was sent to a male student residence in Rockbarton Road in Salt Hill called Gertard, and I was bussed in every morning with two others. To run this student residence. There was about 25 to 30 men there.
And you're still basically a child.
I was 15, yeah, and we left at 8:30 in the morning, didn't get home till 9 o'clock in the evening.
So it wasn't just cooking and chefing you were doing, you were doing everything.
We were doing absolutely everything, all the housework and all of the laundry and the altar cloths as well, the sheets, the linen, all of that, yeah.
All of that. Now, were you learning as well your chefing trade?
There were some teachers that came briefly. There was no teachers there in the school when we went there, but there were a couple recruited and they kind of left after a short time as well. So during my time there, I never received teaching from a teacher or classes from a teacher.
Now, you were on arrival a student. Yeah. At what point did they suggest that you might join Opus Dei itself?
Okay, when we went there, we were all appointed mentors or tutors, and that was to help us with our studies. So in conversations with that tutor, I revealed parts about myself, you know, teenage struggles I had. And gradually, you know, they'd started off saying, say a prayer to your guardian angel, come and do some prayer. And then I started to ask more questions about Opus Dei. I think you might have read in the book, there was an incident where there was some stuff going missing. And, you know, I felt, you know, I think it was suggested that I was the person doing that. And I felt very vulnerable then. So I started to fawn to them because they were cool with me, and there was a whole series of events.
So you wanted to be liked?
I wanted to be liked, I wanted to be accepted, and and I was vulnerable, you know, I was innocent, I had never dealt with something like that, I never rang home, but slowly but surely they got around me, and it was my needing to be liked was part of that as well.
So you joined Opus Dei?
I joined Opus Dei, yeah, in Rome.
Part of the thing we learn about Opus Dei, we've heard, are the mortifications that people are subjected to.
Yeah.
And these are voluntary, if you like, self-punishments to enhance the soul, I suppose.
Well, they're not voluntary, Pat. You know, they're not voluntary at all.
But they're not whipping you. You know,
you do it yourself.
To mortify yourself.
Yeah, you do it yourself, yeah, to yourself, yes. I was 16, and this was given to me, and I was instructed you're to do this for 2 hours a day, to wear the chain and then to flagellate yourself every Saturday. Sometimes if they felt that you were struggling with your vocation, or maybe that you were questioning things, it would be increased. They'd say you need to do it for 3 hours a day. So this came from the founder. The founder, Escriva, there was reports that he used to do this a lot. And, you know, you'd hear stories that where there was blood on walls and so on. But he said that his members, because they work so hard, 2 hours a day was enough.
And the same man, of course, has been outed himself. I mean, his reputation is shredded. So there's no question about his bona fides being inspiring nowadays. People know.
Yeah.
Where did you serve all of your time then?
I served my time in a number of different places. I served it in Gertard in Galway. I was in Lismullen in Navan, County Meath. I worked in the Opus Dei headquarters, Riversdale in Dunleary. And I lived briefly in Rathmore in Clontarf Avenue in Dublin, yeah.
Now, will you talk to me about how your disillusionment set in? I mean, I'd be disillusioned if I had to mortify myself 2 hours a day. But,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
people do this, accept this as part of the norm. When did you become disillusioned with Opus Dei?
You know, first of all, I was exhausted, Pat. You know, there was no time off. There was no annual leave. You know, we couldn't go into the sitting room, sit down, throw your feet up and have a cup of tea. You know, there was nothing like that. You were micromanaged every moment of the day. So I was getting exhausted. My health was suffering and so on. But there was an incident, and I remember it was where the stardust, and there was maybe some not so kind comments afterwards. And I remember feeling, this isn't right. The cracks started to begin to appear. So I started to question things then.
So the lack of, if you like, the Christian message in their responses,
yeah,
or some of them to the stardust tragedy,
yeah, yeah,
made you question, because yeah, that's not the person you were.
No, no, no. I felt very, very sad. Very, very sad at that time, and still do about that, you know. Yeah.
How then did you extricate yourself from this organisation whose tentacles can be quite gripping?
Yeah. Well, I suppose I started to ask questions then, Pat. And I remember one day, and I think it's in the book, I asked, where does all the money go? And I was told, I was told, if you ask that question again, you'll be kicked out to the side of the road. No one will want you, yourself and your family. And there was a couple of bishops involved at that stage. You'll all go to hell. So, you know, any questions was slapped down fairly quickly. Then I think Basil Hume in the UK issued a few diktats that Opus Dei were not to recruit children anymore. So my family became aware of that. So then there was a long negotiation or argument or discussion between them and Opus Dei to try and get me home. So eventually I was brought home for a night, and my parents kept me at home.
They wouldn't let you go back.
They wouldn't let me go back.
Now, the threat was, if you leave us, you'll never be happy. You'll never have a life.
You'll never have a life. You'll never make a good marriage. And you will go to hell. You will have a horrible, horrible life. That was what was told to us through various anecdotes and so on, you know.
Yeah, and the psychological impact of that kind of threat.
Yeah, has huge, huge impact.
So when you left and you stayed that night, which became forever, with your family, what did you feel that first night when you were at home?
Deep down in my gut, took me a long time to recognise it, relief that somebody had saved me, that my dad had saved me, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, huge relief. And then, you know, there was a honeymoon period, you know, there was beautiful life outside of Opus Dei. The world was far kinder than what they had said. You know, people were so kind to me down there, you know. They didn't know me that well, because I'd only moved to Ballyvourney when I was 12 and I'd left when I was 15. But they rallied around me, and so respectfully and so nicely brought me back in and were so kind to me, you know. Yeah.
That was, if you like, the honeymoon period. Did things get rough for you before you finally found your role in life?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a... Yes, it took a while. I was another year and 3 months in Opus Dei before I eventually managed to leave. It took a long time. It took about 20 years, you know, of turmoil and to try and get over and understand and comprehend what had happened to me. You know, once you leave Opus Dei, you're treated as if you're dead. Your name is never mentioned. You can't get back in touch. You're told through anecdotes not to get in contact with any other
members. Even people that you might have become friendly with within Opus Dei, because they were contemporary yours or whatever, you could not
make
contact.
Yeah. Or even the ones that had left, you know, because I didn't know where they had gone either, you know. So it was decades before I found other survivors, you know.
So PTSD was PTSD. A real factor.
Absolutely, 100%. Acute PTSD, Pat, yeah.
Now, you have recovered at this point, I suppose, to the point that you can talk about it and write about it. Where did you find your salvation, your road through life?
Through education. You know, I had nothing. I had no qualifications at all, bar the minimal qualification as a chef. But I went back to school. I did my Leaving Cert in the School of Commerce in Cork, which was brilliant. And we've great, I suppose, nighttime education system in this country, you know. So I did every course possible. I did my degree and I did my master's. And, you know, I was lucky enough to get a job with the Irish Prison Service. And, you know, so, education is the thing that saved me, and good friends.
Now, Opus Dei as an organisation still exists.
Yes.
But I presume they cannot recruit now from underage people anymore.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm speaking out, you know, that, you know, awareness needs to be brought to this issue, you know.
Well, it's a truly extraordinary book. It's called Serve, subtitled My Lost Years at the Heart of Ireland's Opus Dei. And its author is Anne-Marie Allen. And Anne-Marie, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
Thank you very much, Pat. Much appreciated. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.